Grief is a natural part of life, and we all experience it at some point. By becoming aware of our emotions in the process of grief, we can begin to accept and move through our pain. Acceptance doesn't mean that we forget or stop feeling the loss, but it allows us to come to terms with it. And finally, we can choose to honour our loved ones by celebrating their life and finding meaning in our grief. Join me as we explore these pillars of grief and how they can help us navigate the journey of grief. We will explore this journey together, and you will hear from experiencers, experts, and researchers. I'm Jock Brokas, and this is The Pillars of Grief. Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. This is Jock here. This is The Pillars of Grief. It's been a long time since I have been on, obviously, because if anybody's been connected with me in any way from either Instagram or from my YouTube channel, you'll know just over the Christmas period that I've lost a number of people in my life. Last year, 2024, was really hard. A lot of losses in a very, very short space of time. And today I'm going to be jumping into something that's very important to many people. We're going to be talking about anticipated grief and what it means and how to understand it. Because there's a lot of people that are watching their parents or even their loved ones, their daughters, their sons, friends that are dying through illness or any other kind of trauma. And so there's people that lose loved ones over Christmas, including myself, people that we didn't think were going to die. And then there's other people who are watching and waiting on that time to come. And anticipated grief is a very, very unique aspect of the grief journey. Are you struggling with grief? Hi, I'm Jock Brokas, a grief researcher, author, spiritual mentor, and renowned evidential medium. Join me on the Pillars of Grief podcast. Through personal teachings and interviews with experienced researchers and educators, I will provide valuable insights and support to help you navigate your journey through grief. I will answer the questions you yearn to be answered, and I'll help you understand your journey. Listen and subscribe to the Pillars of Grief podcast today on your favorite platform and start navigating your journey through grief. I'm joined today by my very good friend Rebecca Morton, who is a psychotherapist in Liverpool. Rebecca, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you, Jock. I'm a little bit nervous to be here, but also very excited to talk about the topic. Oh,
goodness, there's nothing. I know you know, obviously there's a bit of nervousness because you're going through anticipated grief at the moment, and especially even as a psychotherapist in the work that you do and the research, the academic research that we do as well. This is a very unique time. When we were chatting recently, I said, you got to come on and talk about your experiences. And that's kind of what we're going to do today. And it's very natural anyway, so you just enjoy. But guys that are listening out there, there's a chance that there may be some emotion here because as we get deeper into the conversation, so if you're watching it, then you might see it. But if you're listening to it, you might hear changes in the intonation of the voices. So, what is anticipated grief? Well, it was actually a coin. It was a coined term by Erich Lindemann in the 1940s, and then Elizabeth Kubler-Ross started working. He's a psychiatrist, and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross took that on. And everybody thinks that anticipated grief was coined really by Elizabeth. She didn't. She actually just worked with Lindemann's work that he did. He did a lot of work in grief as a psychiatrist. And was actually probably the pioneer in many different aspects of the grief journey. So, but what is anticipated grief? Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's when you're expecting someone, you're waiting on them passing through illness or through any other kind of situation. And that brings up a whole unique set of challenges. So, Rebecca, you and I talked, and I want to thank you for coming on today because this is really important, and you're going through this at the moment. So if you're happy to do that, let's talk a little bit about what's happening in your life and how this is affecting you.
First, I want to acknowledge, Jock, that thank you for giving me the term anticipatory grief, because I don't think it's a term that I'd considered before, actually. So this is quite a new experience for me to have a term to describe it. But my actual experience has probably been going on for 17 years. My father was an alcoholic, and he struggled right the way through my childhood. Then when I got to about 17, he had a brain injury secondary to alcohol. And he also had a fall where he had a clot on his brain and it had to be removed. So he was in hospital for quite some time with that. And that was touch and go. But it's really after the accident that has been the worst, because of his drinking habits, because of his admission to hospital, him, what they call drying out, getting sober. Then he would discharge himself. And so it was constantly this cycle, this feeling of sitting on the edge, waiting for the phone call of, this is it, your dad's going. And that, as I say, has been 17 years, basically. Around 10 years ago now, 8 years ago, he had all his liberties taken away from him. He was classed as a danger to himself, really, and was put into a care home. He's now in supported living. And so that changed things a little bit, because I was no longer waiting for the phone call to say, your dad's being found here, your dad's being found there. I knew he was safe. He had 24-hour care. He was sober. So it changed the dynamics a little bit. And actually, what that did is it allowed us to have a relationship. We got to know each other. It was wild. And then over the last year and a half, his health has deteriorated with old age at this point now. And so the anticipatory grief is now very, very real. It's imminent that he's going to pass over within the next year. And that's just brought a totally different dynamic to the grieving process and, yeah, to our relationship and our life together.
Before your dad got to the kind of final phases that he's in now, did you always have it in your mind, Rebecca, that, look, I know, we're all going to cross over, we're all going to pass over, and a lot of people think that, you know, that's the end of it, and we know that that's not the end of it, we continue, but there's an element of going before your time and recognizing that maybe it would have been different had the choices that were made would have changed things. So, you know, your dad obviously made his choices, and there's that old saying, you make your bed, create a bed of nails and you have to lie in them. So did you always have it in your mind, though, that he is going to die, but I don't know, he's going to be a lot sooner. I mean, this is going to be a lot sooner than you expected.
As a child, I was probably about 15 when I started to understand what was actually happening with his drinking and how it could potentially affect his life. That's probably when he started getting admitted to hospital, then coming out and getting admitted and coming out. So that's when I really started to think about his death, if you will. And I honestly, Jock, I mean, my dad's, he was an electrician at sea his whole life. He was working in Iran when the war was going on. He's had a lot of it. He was a motorbike racer. He crashed and metal plates in his leg, lost his teeth. You know, he's had a lot of dices with death.
I was going to say, he's been close a few times.
Yeah, and he really, really has. So when I was about 15 and I started thinking about this, I was like, right, okay, he's going to go. Like, I'm going to be one parent down. Really, and not that he was drastically involved in our upbringing anyway because of his job and because of his addiction, but it's one thing to have him there. It's another thing to lose him. Mm-hmm. Even if he's not so active, they're two very, very different things. And so, yeah, I remember being 18, 19, working in JD Sports, it's a chain of sports store chains.
I remember JD Sports.
So I worked for them for many years and I still remember it like yesterday now. The phone calling multiple times. It'd be my mum asking me what I wanted for my dinner or something like that. But I always remember the anxiety.
Thinking it was your dad.
Yeah. The pain in my chest, thinking, this is the phone call to say your dad's gone.
So you've been essentially waiting even before this last year where it's getting closer, but you've been essentially waiting for, say, over 10 years or even maybe more. I know you said 17 years, but you were kind of getting into it.
Yeah, I think it was it's basically half my life, Jock. Which when I put that into perspective and I just think about that, I then start to think, what state have I been living in? As what's my homeostasis? If I've been living that on edge my whole life. And
Obviously
past that point, as he had his liberties taken away, he went into care. I then became his carer, not full time, but yeah. I was the only one. I had to pick a care home for him. I've been responsible for sorting his finances out, all of that. And I was only a child still when all that happened.
You were forced to grow up a lot quicker.
Yeah.
And not realizing it, that really you were in the grieving process way before you even knew what grief was.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to jump on to your mother a little bit because... Mm-hmm. How did that affect your mum? Did your mum find that hard? Was she going through that grieving process as well? And how was that dynamic psychologically for your mother?
It's interesting with my mum, Jock, because I have so much compassion and empathy for her for what she's lived through for our lives whilst we were young and raising us basically on her own. And then when my dad got sick, my nan, my mum's mum, she was sick around the same time and she passed over.
Mm.
And so my mum was trying to cope with all of that. My parents separated when I was in my teens. And although my mum will still see, like, she'll go and visit them now and they'll have conversations, there was not, I think it was too much for her. I think she probably has a lot of feelings and emotions. I won't name them for her, but I feel she's probably got a lot of feelings and emotions towards me dad for the life that she's had as a result of him. So her whole process is tangible. I can feel it, but I'm very aware that it's not me and it's not my process, and that's something that I've really had to try to both separate from my own self, my own life, my own relationship with my dad, but also for my relationship with my mum, and to be able to have that empathy and compassion for her decision making.
It's fantastic that you have got to a level of understanding through your awareness and compassion for your mother, because I think this is something that people may not understand, Rebecca, is that whilst every individual's grief is their grief, is their journey, I've always said you can't heal through grief, it's something you integrate. But also grief can be a catalyst to disconnection. And sometimes that disconnection is needed in terms of your mother, because your mother, through the grieving process, even though she, and it was anticipated grief, she knew, even when you take away this idea of death and passing over, the relationship that she had was gone. There's other elements of grief that people don't think about. It's not just about death. It's about the relationship, self-identity, the identity that they may have had as a couple. Then it's separation and distance. The very fact that you can accept that, I mean, that says a lot about your own fortitude and your own strength, you know, your own psychology, your own strength. But your mother separating from him, do you think that was also a way of her she couldn't deal with it. She couldn't deal with that aspect of grief. She was grieving and she knew she had to give it up because it would not have been her life. Her life would have been completely different. And there's also got to be an element in that decision that she made that caused her a lot of suffering to how it would have impacted the rest of the family or the rest of the environment.
I think my mum has suffered her whole life, if I'm perfectly honest, Jock. But since having us, I think I think grief has been present in many ways, in more ways than I probably know, more ways than she's probably shared with me. And I say to clients all the time, as you've rightly identified, grief isn't just about death. you could lose your home, you could lose your job, lose your family, your identity. And I think you're right. For my mum, grief was being experienced even before she left him, because I think she probably knew that she had a sense, a woman's intuition, call it, of where it was going to end up. And at the end of the day, it's salvaging what you can, because I think had she have stayed, where would that have left her? And I want to actually just give a big shout out to my mum right now, because she retired a year or year and a half ago, and she's like a different woman. She is living life for herself. It's finally, she's finally in a space where she's prioritising herself. She's doing what she wants.
That's fantastic.
And I think most of life hasn't been like that, Joch. I think most of life, as you've said, is being in some kind of grieving process for one thing or another, not just death related.
Yeah, I think, and I think you probably noticed that in your psychotherapy practice. There's a lot of people that overlap into a lot of their emotional, psychological points of vibration or even attraction. The grief has got a lot to contend with. I mean, there's elements of grief in everybody's life. We just don't recognize it or realize it. Do you think do you feel that your father also grieved? There must have been a part of him that grieved as well.
My dad, I mean, he was in his 40s when he had me and my brother. There's 18 months between us.
Yeah.
And he had a son from a previous relationship. And my dad lost his sister, who was like his best friend.
Mm.
He lost his ex-partner, although I believe they were separated, but that's still loss. And then he also lost his father. Then he lost his job because he lost his hearing and he couldn't pass a medical. And so objectively now I can sit and I can literally visualize the spiral of loss and grief, and it just compacts and compounds, the first one impacting the next, impacting the next, impacting the next. And so I actually don't have any, that's a lie. I do have some, and I'm sure it's going to come up when he passes. But my anger and negative feelings are limited because I have, again, a level of compassion and understanding that he was doing the best that he could to cope with what he had. That's the bottom line. But I can be angry about other things that might come up. But I feel like anger is a part of grief, a very natural part, but that I acknowledge for me, I'm yet to experience.
That's fascinating. Let's talk a little bit about that, because let's go into some of these coping mechanisms. Because I think in your practice, you deal with coping mechanisms all the time, right? But mm-hmm. I think there's an element, certainly in the grieving process, where people don't know how to cope and they don't know how to look at their coping mechanisms in a way. As an example, you know, we were talking about this with the loss and everything that I had experienced over the Christmas period and just before, and before that. I remember being in the coffee shop, you know, and just breaking down and making almost like, you know, making a spectacle of myself, but recognizing that it was a coping mechanism that I couldn't keep in, that I just had to let it happen. Because it, in a way, it just gave that relief for that moment and that time. So I think a lot of people don't understand how to cope. They hold themselves back a little bit. So let's talk a little bit about how your coping mechanisms work and how you can see that maybe mirror in your practice as well.
Mm. I think for me, my coping mechanism to cope generally with my dad over the last however many years has been to compartmentalize some of my stuff to be able to care for him. Especially probably over the last 4 years, I've really found my spirituality and my understanding what is true for me in the world and what happens both while we're on earth and whilst we're not physically on earth. And I think that's been a great coping mechanism and a great comfort, Joch, to know that he'll continue on anyway. and he'll probably still be impacting my life in some way or another when he's on the other side.
He'll not even get a rest.
I
know, he'll be making up for lost time. I often hear from when I'm doing sittings and private sittings for people, I often hear from the other side that they can do a lot more for you over there. But there's an element, and I'll maybe go into that later, there's an element of selfishness and grief that I've spoken about many times that we have to become aware of as well. But what other coping mechanisms do you have other than compartmentalizing yourselves? I mean, or let's say, for instance, how would you suggest to someone who is actually going, because you're going through it now, you're literally waiting, the clock is ticking, how would you then, sitting in front of someone who's sitting in your practice and just comes out with this, the issues that they're having, whether it's a family practice or one, and it triggers something in you, like, wow, okay, I know this because now I know I'm going through, it's anticipated a grief and they're looking after a loved one who's ready to pass. What would you say to that person based on the way that you're coping?
My biggest number one go-to coping mechanism is always be kind to yourself.
That's brilliant.
I think a lot of us can get bogged down. I know, in my situation, I've had moments in time where I've been like, I'm not doing enough. I need to be doing more. I should be speaking with this doctor. I should be doing that. But actually, it's self-love, self-compassion, Jock. And for me, I know I'm doing and have done everything within my power to keep my dad alive, keep him safe, keep him as well as possible. And equally, I am also doing everything in my power now to give him grace in his final time, that I'm not forcing him to do anything he doesn't want to do. I'm not forcing him to remain on earth for more than he needs to be when he's in pain. I think it's very important to allow yourself to feel everything, like you just described the breakdown in the coffee shop. That is so important. It's so important not to suppress that. And I think, to be really clear, the suppression that I've done has been to care for my dad. It's not a suppression of necessarily grief. And it was a survival thing. Like, it was something that I had to do for a period of time. I'm now in that space where I'm bringing all of that suppression back to the surface. And it's really difficult. I'm not going to sit here and pretend it's super easy.
No.
And, it's really easy for me to just cry in front of my partner all the time. It's not. I'll come and I'll hide and I'll cry on my own. And then I'll be like, right, okay, I can get on with whatever it is I need to now. But I think self-awareness, notice what's happening in your body. If you're starting to feel that tight chest, that anxiousness, feeling like you need to cry or you just need to escape, how can you give that to yourself? And one thing I say to clients is, if you can't take the day off work and you can't just escape to a little room on your own, how can you give yourself 1% of what you need? So if you can't take the day off, can you have a moment in the toilet? Can you have an afternoon off? What does that look like? But honouring what it is that you need.
Now, you say a couple of things there that interest me, because you talk about how you're feeling that you don't want to cry in front of your partner or that, and you go away on your own to have that little cry. Do you think there's an element of that, though, that is not necessarily good for you, that you should be able to express that without having to go away and hide? Because you mentioned that word hide, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I've noticed through all the years and everything that I've experienced, and I say to a lot of my clients, is don't hide it. If someone says how you're feeling today and you've got your loved one on your mind and everything else, don't hide back and just tell them, well, look, I've just lost my husband, or I've just lost my partner. I'm really struggling, actually, because there's something cathartic in just being able to express it. And I think that's an important distinction to make. A lot of people cannot express their grief because a lot of people in the public don't know how to cope with it, how to deal with it. And they also feel as if it's a weakness. So what about you? You think you could, is that something you could work on, because you kind of, you don't, maybe not hide away? Because there's that element of guilt as well. I feel that.
Yeah. And it is something I'm super aware of. And I will cry with him at times.
Right.
But it's, for me, one of my areas for improvement is about allowing other people to see me vulnerable and to receive and
power
be supported.
Because massive power in that. Yeah.
Spent me whole life supporting others, Joch, and that's my job. But especially as a child, children of alcoholics, anybody who has ever experienced anything like that or any addictions will know, you're constantly hypervigilant. You're constantly looking and observing everyone else's behaviour. So to allow yourself to be vulnerable is, in the past, hasn't been safe to do so. So I'm literally trying to reprogram myself to remember and learn that I can be vulnerable, I can be safe with other people, I can rely on other people. But you also touched on like the lack of understanding and maybe elements of shame and guilt that happen in society around grief.
Wow, yeah.
And being upset, you know, just not being okay.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just okay not to be okay.
Mm.
And I think that's important for us to realise that we've got to, and for men, so, you know, I find as well, Rebecca, that men are very restricted in being able to express their emotions, especially when it comes to the grief, whether it's grief of a loved one, whether it's the grief of loss of a job or an identity or a disconnection in some way. Men are still have this idea that they should be warriors and the stiff upper lip and the old British, you know, stand tall, typical military, and that's never a good thing. It causes us a lot more suffering. Do you think that your experiences now, though, knowing that, you know, what you've learned, you've become aware, and I'll go into, we'll talk about this spiritual foundation, which I think is fascinating, and it really does help us. But do you think your experiences now, that you're becoming more aware, that you're aware now of what's actually happening, but you've had so many emotions and upside down roller coasters. Do you think, though, it's empowering you to move forward, even in your practice?
100%. How can it not, Joch? I think for some people, you've got to be open to it. And I think that's the thing. You know, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. You have got to be open to noticing that. Touching on the gender differences, my brother, 18 months between us, he's having a very different experience with all of this. Not really willing to talk about it, very different feelings. So it's about how open you are. If you can see it, can acknowledge it, be kind to yourself, self-compassion again, then it will transform you. And, you know, leading into, I don't want to go there too soon if we're not ready, but leading into the spiritual elements of it, Joch, when we look at life and death cycles, the death of one cycle is the life, the beginning of another cycle. And so I think when you have an understanding of what that means for you, and there's not a universal meaning, it's what you take from it, what you need, then how can you not grow and be empowered and change from that?
We'll go into that. Let's go into that spiritual side of things. I think that's really important. And actually, it does. I think it does actually, you know, it kind of mirrors maybe your brother. Does your brother has he not got much of a spiritual foundation? Do you think that's what held him back?
He's a tough one, my brother, because he knows what the world consists of. He's had many experiences, but he won't live by it. He hasn't integrated it into his life. That's what I will say.
That's important.
But he knows.
Right.
The thing is, he knows. And so, but the other side of that, Joch, is, you know, it's going to happen in his time. And, you know, someone to play. No, I'm not here to play with timelines. You know,
no.
I have to trust that in his timeline, if it's meant to be, he will integrate that.
So, well, let's talk about your spiritual foundation, because it's easy for me to go straight into how my spiritual foundation was. I've been a medium for over 25 years, but I was in a seminary and all that kind of stuff. But the reality is that I believe, or so I don't like to use the word I believe, I know that if you don't have a spiritual foundation in life, life becomes harder and a spiritual foundation is based on every aspect of life. Henry Ford had a spiritual foundation. Dale Carnegie, these magnets of industry back in the day, they all had a spiritual foundation. So where did your spiritual foundation finally get its growth from? Because it's seeded in us from when we're young. And where did you find that? Right, okay, this is my path.
So hard to say, Jock, because I had so many experiences as a child that I didn't even realise I was having, and no one around me pointed out or realised I was having until I was way older. I was always different. I always knew I wasn't like everybody else. And not because I'm special or I'm different, but because I had an awareness, a self-awareness that no one else really my age ever had. And it's funny because it goes back to grief. Funnily enough, I just dawned on me now.
It kind of does. Everything can be, no matter what you look at in life, there's an aspect of grief in every thread of life.
Yeah, so I was probably about 25. I'd been in a relationship since I was 19. And it ended abruptly on my birthday. I wasn't expecting it.
Oh, wow.
And just before that, I'd started to get into things like crystals and stuff. But that was, without a shadow of a doubt, the catalyst, the strongest catalyst, let's say, for me to really step into that world, really step into understanding what it means when we say everything's energy, what it means when we can connect to different parts of ourselves. Like, as a young person, I'd tried Reiki. I've always practiced yoga. So there was always, like, threads, let's say, that were always present in my life in one way or another. I've had remote viewing experiences, just knowing of things without, and my mum was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And the next day something had happened and you'd be like, she was, even my mum was freaked out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say it was that grief of losing a relationship. And it's funny because when I think back, I was so blinkered in life. It was like, this is what my life is. This is how it's going to be. And the end, basically. And it was like that grief shook the blinkers off and just really opened my eyes to the nature of things. And as a result of that, I started traveling, solo traveling. And I think that was also one of the single greatest catalysts for me coming to know my greater nature.
Do you think then, for your spiritual foundation, from what you've learned or what you've had that awareness, how that has actually helped you for the foundation of understanding this level of anticipated grief, knowing that there's that event is dawning on you?
It's funny because I probably, in this anticipatory grief now, I probably feel more prepared, and I know you can never be prepared to lose somebody. I'm not naive either, but I feel more prepared than I have been at any other stage in my life for the same relationship I've had with my dad, because I know that it goes on. Life goes on. This is just it's just matter, and it's what's carrying us, it's what's inside that remains. I always remember during COVID, we were on the beach, me, my mum and my brother, we all lived together at the time, and we'd not long got a new dog. We were all on the beach walking along, and my brother said to me, don't you think it's mad the way, like, the water that's there, it's just, it never ever disappears, it just goes up, it comes down, it stays on earth forever. And I remember thinking, oh my god,
that's,
and it's quite, the same,
that's
with energy.
Quite profound.
So this is what I mean about him. He's very frustrating because he knows, but he doesn't integrate the knowledge.
But hopefully, what's his name?
His name's Ben.
Ben. So Ben, yeah. Hopefully that your sister sends you this and you listen to this. It's about time to express your spiritual side. You know, if I can do it and I'm an ex-soldier, there's nothing stopping you, dude. So get on with it.
Yes, John.
So fly your flag for you. It's brilliant.
But it's true, because the basic tenet of what he was saying was energy can't be created
destroyed.
Or destroyed.
It can only be
whatever's
manipulated.
Here. Yeah. Yes, whatever's here now is here. So this is matter. This can break down and disintegrate, but the energy of it will always exist. So if that's the case, then when our physical bodies are no more, what happens to the energy that we once were? Where does it go?
Beyond this podcast, my work involves delivering thought-provoking talks and workshops which are deeply rooted in my experience and extensive research. My objective is to bring a profound understanding of grief to your organisation, turn an adversity into strength, resilience and growth. I can help you forge a compassionate and supportive environment that encourages emotional resilience. We will create sustainable solutions for managing grief and loss. Understanding grief isn't a luxury, it's a necessity, a fundamental aspect of our human experience that directly impacts our work lives. As leaders, your comprehension and management of grief can be transformational for your organisation. I invite you to collaborate with me on this journey. Contact me at jockbrokers.com. It never destroys.
It's never going to go anywhere.
And we get, you know, without getting into the afterlife side of it and the signs, we get the signs. We our loved ones do communicate. We have to learn that new language. I want to jump into something that might be a little bit harder to maybe acquiesce, really, because have you had the conversation? Now, I guess your father knows he's going to go. Your father knows he's ill, right? Kinda, right?
He's got cognitive problems, so he knows, his soul knows, which is the conversation you and I had.
Yeah, that's it. So have you had that? Have you thought, I mean, I know you said we're thinking about that conversation, but do you think that you need to have that conversation with your father as well?
And to be honest, Jock, it's really funny because I think I've been unconsciously avoiding going to see him because I haven't seen him since we spoke last I think I said this to you, it feels like it's at the surface. I just want to go and be with him. He knows that they're not going to operate. He knows that he's being given a time limit on his life. And so I think what I want to go and say to him is more of like a really gentle permission to know that he doesn't have to hang, that he can go whenever he's ready, and I don't want him to be in pain, and to know that really he's not going anywhere anyway, and that he'll still be able to have contact with us, and that I'll be ready when that's going to happen.
Having that permission is very strong.
He might not understand, and he might be looking at me and go, "What on earth are you talking about?" But I know that his soul will know.
Yeah, I
know that. And do you know what? It's funny because my dad's a very sensitive man. Like, he can be listening to music and cry. He can watch the TV and something really touch him and get emotional. He's quite a deep man, but he's never allowed himself to be.
You know,
he's never been able to.
I think it's an interesting point, Rebecca, that we're bringing up here, because we always think, when you talk about anticipated grief, we always think about we're anticipating, right? Like, if someone's ill and we anticipate they're going to cross over. We anticipate they've got a shortened timeline. We anticipate that the illness that they have is slowly progressing. But we never seem to think, well, wait a minute. Is the person who is experiencing it in anticipated grief, because they know they're going to pass, and they know that they're getting ill, and they know that you see that. And maybe we don't, as a community as such, or you know, people that are invited, we don't think so much about what our loved ones have. I remember a guy called Ed. I love him, Ed and Pat. And when I came here to North Carolina, I came here because of Ed. Ed was a war veteran, and he got ill. And I used to travel from Florida to go and be by his bedside and to pray with him. And we got chatting about what it was like on the other side. He was a religious man, but he respected who I was and what I did. And we got chatting a lot about the afterlife. And he wasn't anticipated grief, but being able to sit with him and open up and communicate that to him brought a level of comfort that allowed him to take that on board and then pass. And I think we don't do enough of that. I don't think there's enough conversation that happens when it's imminent, or there's something that we know that they're going to be able to, something, how we can prepare them for that transition.
Mm-hmm. And that reminds me of something. There's something that's come up about my dad, but I don't know if you, I assume you've read the book Tuesdays with Murray.
Oh, brilliant.
Mitch Albom.
Great. I got it on Audible and I got it in print and all.
Honestly, I think that is...
That guy was a genius.
I think that's a key read for anybody who
wants
to know more, in a really easy read and story-like way. Anyone who wants to just experience grief read that book, because that was a really big, a big change factor for me to understand. It's similar to what the experience that you had, going to someone's bedside, sitting with them, talking to them about what it's going to be like. And I think for my dad, I think you've just illuminated something to me, Jack, that I'm probably not giving him as much credit as he deserves for being in his anticipatory grief, because he's been getting like the GP or the paramedics called out because he's been to having funny turns. And he'll say to me, I know I'm not right. Something's not right. So he knows that he's the one who's living in his body and having a spiritual mind. And I say to my clients, you know, no one knows you like you know you. And sometimes I have to check myself, because I seem to, like, again, compartmentalize my dad from every other relationship and part of my life, when actually he will be going through that. He does know his body better than anybody does. And so, yeah, that feels like, I feel like this is encouraging me to have courage to really go and sit with them and have this conversation.
Yeah, and I think that's brilliant, because, and this is why we need to give them that. And that's a part of giving them the grace, but also it's a part of deep respect and honouring, because you're sharing in one another's vulnerability. And while that, and we've spoke about this as well, so ladies and gentlemen, this is really important. Rebecca's father might not be cognitively function the way that he used to, but you have to remember that our souls know, we're able to talk directly to our soul. We're able to, you know, our brain and our mind are completely different. Let's not get into that argument, but there is scientific arguments for it. And I've written a freaking paper on that as well. So that's really important. But it is important to know that even if they can't cognitively function, it's just as important for you to have that conversation, so that you can sow that seed in their soul, because their soul will know, and maybe their cognitive function won't know, but they're going to know at a deeper level.
My clinical supervisor also said something to me recently, because this has been present for some time now, so I've been sharing it with different people in different times and spaces. And she said to me, you know, think about what conversations you want to have, but also give acknowledgement to the unspoken conversations, because there will be things that I won't be able to say, or that he won't be able to say. And she just encouraged me. I mean, she's a shamanic practitioner as well, so very earth-based, spiritual. She said, just be mindful that there will be unspoken conversations as well that will be playing into the dynamic and into your grief. So yeah, make space for that.
I think that's brilliant. I'm glad that, and also there's an element of touch and a physical touch and things like that that you can communicate by, not just necessarily words or even a telepathic connection, but just the sense of touch or the sense of being there in that presence also helps. And I think it's brilliant that you can maybe have that conversation when you're ready as well, because it's also got to be a time when you're ready to do that, and that helps through your own spiritual foundation. Your work that you do now with clients, do you think now that what you're experiencing now is attributable to them, that you can actually take your experience now and help them with theirs?
And vice versa. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Earlier this year, I started noticing the presence in my work of the theme of death. And it was, for some people, it was death cycles. So things were happening in their life where things were dying off. Yeah. So there was elements of grief within it, but some of it wasn't grief. Some of it was just pure death. And so I was like, this is very interesting. Why is all this death showing up in my work? And then shortly after, honestly, you couldn't write it, Jock. And then shortly after, we got the news that my dad wasn't, they weren't going to operate. And there's another important thing that's just dawned on me here, actually. My dad's brother died a couple of months ago.
Right.
Unexpectedly. Similar thing, from alcohol misuse. And it was sudden. The funeral was bittersweet because we got to see people. My dad got to see old friends, even if he couldn't quite remember who they were. And then we just, since you and I spoke, another one of his brothers has died.
Wow.
He's obviously not well. And then his mum's also alive, who's 98, my grandmother.
Wow.
So when you shared with me your story of what you've been through over the last 6 months, you know, six family members in 6 months, and I started to reflect on my situation, I thought, oh goodness, as you sharing your story with me, Jock, trying to alert me to what might be coming in our lives as well. And I think that's the really important thing. When you're open to noticing these patterns, you're open to preparation in some way, and you have the ability to label it anticipatory grief or label it something, an awareness that you might not if you were not already open. So hearing your story makes me go, right, okay, could be a possibility, let's not catastrophize. But thanks, Jock, for coming in and sharing that with me, because it's you know, lit up something in my life. And thank you, client, for bringing that to my attention, because now it's helped me to look at what's happening in my situation differently. And, you know, in the reverse, like you asked, it allows me to bring something different then into my work with clients. I am more aware of when the grief cycle is present or that life and death cycle is happening. And you generally will attract clients who are a reflection of the process that you're going through or that you're about to go through.
What you vibrate at, you're going to attract.
Absolutely.
I'm going to change it up a bit, because I think there's another interesting aspect, and I'll share a personal story with mine as well. But let's talk about intuition and grief, right? Because I strongly know it's coming before it's happening, right? So it's like, we can get that, we know that they know that they know that I know that she knows that it's kind of, there's a knowingness that we have a deep feeling in our intuition, because that's based on our spiritual foundation. I remember my mother-in-law, as you know, I was really close to that passed at Christmas. She came and it was kind of, she always came every year. She always came and visited every year for my birthday and Joe's birthday. And she spent, you know, a month with us. It was phenomenal, longer than a month. And I remember we were in Biltmore. And as you know, I'm also a photographer and I love photography, not only just for when I do it for work or anything else, but it's a deep spiritual expression, creativity. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're all creative beings. I remember taking the shot of my wife and mum together and knowing in my heart that was the last picture I would ever take of them. And couldn't, and here was the thing. Even though I knew and my intuition, my psychic ability was pulling up and saying, this is the last one, I could not face it. Because there was an element in my material world that I didn't want to turn upside down. And I let you talk about compartmentalizing things. I put it away. I shoved it in a box that I didn't want to face, and only opened that Pandora's box the day that she got rushed into hospital. And I kind of wish that I had prepared myself even more, because even though I'm apparently supposed to, you know, people like you say you're an expert, but you're grieving. How do you grieve? Well, same as everybody else, but. Because I've got more knowledge or more experience than most people, it still didn't stop me making that, perhaps that wrong decision or not wanting to face the emotion, but just because there's that element of human capacity in me that didn't want that to happen. And I think that's really important that we face up to the fact that we may also get these intuitive nudges, these signs, way before. And it's important to become more aware of them, because it helps you in the journey. Did you ever have that kind of thing? Did you ever have those nudges? You see, smiling, so I know that you probably did.
Do you know what, Jack? What always makes me smile about you? I forget that you're psychic. And then sometimes you just changed the subject then. And it was like, you already knew what I was thinking. you already knew what, like, I thought, oh, yeah, what about that? And I just want to take a moment, Jock, to acknowledge what you've just shared then, because it felt really significant to hear you share it, that even when we do all the preparation, we've got all the knowledge, we've got all the physical tools and bits and pieces, and as you used the word, you know, we can be experts in things.
At the
end of the day, we're still human, Jock. You got that message and you knew that in that moment. But sometimes we make decisions. Yeah. And do you know why? Because it keeps us safe in some respect. It allowed you to continue on enjoying life as it was. And for me, I don't think that that's a bad thing, because in that moment, it allowed you to stay in the moment. It allowed you to continue experiencing what you're experiencing and not get caught up in the future, which was going to happen, whether you
were with them or not. I also say, you know, mediumship or psychic ability is a blessing. It's to help people who are grieving, to help people that need help in all sorts of ways. But it is also a curse, because that's an element of it that I knew and had to compartmentalize, had to face and not face that, you know. So our experiences, it can be a blessing and a curse at the same time.
For sure. And going back to that intuition, Jock, I think my dad's had three funny turns now. And the last two, I was aware of it the first time. I don't know if I was. And this was like in 2 week spates over the last month. We were going on holiday. We were flying out to Morocco just a couple of weeks ago. And the night before, I just felt really agitated. Didn't know why. We were going on holiday the next day. Like, should have been, you know, full of the joys of spring. So agitated and just like, a little bit aggy. Woke up the next morning, had really bad chest pains and just felt super anxious. I was like, what is going on? Literally a couple of hours later, gets a phone call. It's your dad. We've had to call the GP out again. And the first time I felt it, but wasn't really aware of it. And then this time, as soon as I saw the number calling me, I was like, that's what this bloody feeling is.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
And I think it's important. You mentioned that distinction. It's also there's an element of your soul trying to keep you safe. Also trying to forewarn you that be prepared for this. This is coming. It's really strange. My wife knew as well. She's an incredible woman. She's an incredible spiritual being, psychic, you know, my greatest teacher I've ever had. And she knew Mum was going to pass, but she also couldn't face it. But there was an element of you. So you're sharing with you now that you had this. I don't know, maybe a depression, an anxiety, a tightness and everything else. She had it before Mum went into the hospital. She had it right even all the way through. She couldn't get rid of this. There was this depression. There was this anxiety. There was this darkness that was around that she was picking it up, that this was about to happen and get ready. But we couldn't face it.
I'm curious, Jock. What happens if we get that intuition and we act upon it? And I say act with a small a. I don't mean we have to physically be doing something, but what can happen and what I think we have to be mindful of, depending on the situation. But I think if I get that intuition and I'm like, right, okay, you know, he's going, does that impair my ability to make decisions? So if, for example, let's say he was in hospital and I'm speaking very specifically about my situation. Let's say my dad was in hospital and he needed some kind of medical care. Would I decide against it because I've accepted that he's about to die? And is that in his best interest? So it's a very fine line to teeter. And I think you've got to be really, really careful. I, especially as a woman, value my intuition more than any of my skills, I'll be really honest. But equally, I think if I was to live my life solely guided by my intuition on the earth plane, would I be making the best decisions for me and those around me? And I think that's, I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on that if we do accept that intuition and we accept it and we act from it, what does that look like actually in practice?
I think that's a fascinating question. And that's probably another episode as well, actually, on one of my other podcasts. But I would say that the power of discernment in your intuition is paramount, and people do not know how to discern. So we talk about discernment, about knowing what is good or what is bad for you. Or, you know, a simple idea is, in a haunting case, is you can discern if it's an evil spirit or a good spirit, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That kind of. But the power of discernment in your intuition is a fundamental. Remember, we're all governed as well by divine law, and there's certain things that we can't go against. There's certain aspects that in every law's relation, there's a relationship. It's relational to another law. And every one of them operate in a natural way. I mean, karma is about how, not about what you give out and you get back. It's actually about how the universe operates. It's a seed, if you like, of everything else that comes from it. But I think it's important to understand the power of discernment in your intuition, because a lot of people's lives go upside down because they don't listen to their intuition. But also you have to remember that you have the free will to make choices, right? And so you've got to be able to discern that intuition from a point of, is it serving you in the moment now? And are you being prepared for something that is going to enhance your spiritual development? Or are you being tested to see whether you're going to make the right decision? There's a lot more dynamics come into this role of intuition and discernment, especially when you're dealing with lives and your own life. It's not just a simple case of listening and I got to turn left because if I turn right, I'm going to hit a car crash. But there's also, and I'll share this, there's also a time to live and a time to die, right? And you can bring your time earlier or not, given your free will choices as well, spirituality. I remember after I had a near death experience in a car accident, Joe and I decided we were doing a church service from, we were traveling from Inverness going to Aberdeen. We're going to demonstrate, and we were going early in the morning. We're going to get breakfast, and we didn't want to stop where we were going to stop. For some reason, we decided to carry on. And we just got a new car and we pulled into this garden center to go and get breakfast, and we shouldn't really have gone in there. And there's nothing wrong with the car, but what happened was that we went in, Joe didn't like it. It was like, oh, no, I don't like this. This is not, don't feel the energy, don't feel right. And but the car wouldn't start, right? The car wouldn't start. It waited, everything it waited, a certain amount of time had passed. And then the door opened, we got in, and it started. We couldn't get it. It was just weird. As we were driving out and we started driving up that highway, up that road, we were driving on the left-hand side and the car started, there's a lorry started to overtake another car and another vehicle started to overtake. And had we had been seconds, if not a minute earlier, we would have been in a fatal collision. Because as it happened, we had to take evasive maneuvers to actually escape a full-blown collision. So, and we never had a problem with the car again. It wasn't our time. And so there was an intervention that happened. So I know that there's a time that we're meant to be born. There's a time that we're meant to pass over. But there can be interventions when it's not our time. But equally, based on our choices and our lack of discernment, and our lack of following our intuition, we could bring that timeline shorter. I don't think it's destined that anybody takes drugs. I don't think it's destined that anybody commits suicide. There's environments, there's things, there's influences that happen that make us take these decisions. And that effectively changes the dynamic of our direction.
For sure, Jack. That's really interesting, just to sit and take a minute to reflect on that. How our timelines are our timelines, and yeah, we make decisions every day that impact it. However, if you override your intuition, then divine law, as you say, can intervene. And which was the case that it did with you, and stopping you from getting in the car.
And it's also important to realize that when someone is ill, is that you're still governed by divine law. I mean, there's man's law, which is fallible, and but there's divine law, which is perfect in its operation. And let's say, for instance, you know, you're in anticipated grief, you're dealing with it, your father's getting to the end of his days, and the doctor then comes and says, look, we just should just switch the machine off. What's the point? Here's another dilemma. What are we doing? How can we discern that that's right? And is it right for us to switch that machine off? Is it interfering with their karmic balance in life? What is the consequences of us doing that? Or are there no consequences? Hard one to think.
I feel like that there are consequences. I definitely believe that, whether that's something that you experience in this life or not. For me, the thing that's always stuck with my dad is about quality of life and pain. Mm-hmm. He's in horrendous pain now. We're waiting for a pain clinic referral because he can't have his knee operated on.
People suffering. I really don't
that's
like
it. That's the key word, Joch, suffering. Because I don't personally believe, I think suffering's a key part of life. I was reading something about it the other day, actually, and we all have to experience suffering to some extent because it helps us to appreciate the non-suffering more.
I think that was a famous thing from the Buddha as well that carried on through Buddhist teachings.
And that, you know what, I was reading it was a psychotherapist talking about their Buddhist practice, and that's where I was reading it from. So thank you for, again, intuiting where that information came from.
Yeah, it's true, it is. The Buddha the strength in suffering as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, but it's when is the suffering not
too much?
Yeah, it's too much, and the person's quality of life. You know, for me, I've made the decision that my dad won't be resuscitated because his body's too weak. And if he goes and we resuscitate him and he comes back, there's the risk that he'll have even less capacity and even less quality of life. And, you know, is that what he wants? No, I know that's not what he wants. His quality of life is poor now. Is it what I want? No. But then if I make it solely from my frame of reference, is that selfish? Because it's me who's got to deal with it if he stays. So these are really tough decisions and tough questions I've had to ask myself, Jock. And really use that discernment about whether, you know.
And there's a selfishness in grief, right? Because we think about what we need or what we want, and what, and even when we lose a loved one, even now, and I admit it, ladies and gentlemen, I the people like my uncle that I lost, my mother-in-law and friends and Sheila, I'm being selfish because I want them here. I miss them. I have guilt. I have shame. There's all sorts of things that go through my mind, and I realize, but I'm aware that there's a selfishness that I have about it, because when we lose a loved one, or even we're anticipating the loss, it's not a bad thing, guys. It's not a bad thing to realize that you're being selfish in grief, because it's a natural process that you want to hold on. It's a natural process that you might think that you've not done enough. It's a natural thing. And it's important to understand as well that even in that selfishness, when you get to the point of making that decision, do I not DNR, do I not resuscitate, then you got to remember, and this is where discernment comes in, is that their choices have brought them to where it is, so you're not going to affect their karma in much of a way. You're not going to affect yours either, because you're just, you know, it was their choice that led them there. And had it been that they had planned out the rest of their days or anything else, and they hadn't made those choices, this was just natural progression, then obviously there's going to be some kind of dynamic law, divine law, that you may be going against some karmic law. But I think it's important to really recognize that and not beat yourself up, that realize that there's a selfishness in it, but there's also a power in the awareness of it.
Yeah, and the transformative capacity. And something that's just come up for me in us talking, Jock, that I'd like to just bring into the conversation.
Absolutely.
Is about anticipatory grief and perhaps how it's perceived by other people and the feelings that come up with it. And what I'm speaking to here is about some days I'm grieving really hard. I can't think about anything else. I fear the day that he goes. And I feel some shame, to be perfectly honest,
yeah.
Jock.
Absolutely.
In being emotional before it happens, because there's part of me that's like, well, it's going to get worse than this when he goes, so, you know, can you not just hold all of this in now? Can you not just stop feeling like this now? Because you're going to get your chance to be upset anyway, Rebecca. So, yeah, I guess I just want to shine a light on that for myself, but also for anybody else that might be feeling that. That, you know, struggling with allowing yourself to experience anticipatory grief. Yeah.
I think you've got to think about it like a bottle of Coke that you shake, right? If it has got nowhere to express itself and expand, it's going to explode inside, and that's the element of it. You know, you've got to be able to let open the tap and let it flow. Because what happens if we've got to, like, you know, there's a lot of wars recently. There's been dams that have been busted. Look at the damage and the destruction from a dam that was busted in Ukraine, right? Holding that water back and then letting that out, that's it just destroys it. Whereas if it's flowing, if there's a natural flow, then it's easier to contend with.
And I know in my heart and in my body, Jock, that's the right thing. But there's still this part of me that, feels some like shame that I shouldn't be feeling it, I shouldn't be doing it, you know. Why?
And you've got to honour that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the part where the spiritual side really can help as well. It goes back to that self-compassion. You know, if I can offer it to everybody else, I've got to be able to offer it to myself.
Here's something I wanted before we finish off, and I think this is really important because maybe a lot of people haven't thought about this. Look, obviously, we came through COVID in 2019, 2020, and it's, you know, there's still elements of COVID that are around, right? Imagine the amount of anticipated grief with those loved ones that were struck down with COVID, were held in a hospital, they couldn't see anyone. And then I often liken it to the biblical plague in Moses when this unknown force came down and took the firstborn, right? That's kind of where I thought, you know, this is where I kind of thought COVID was going. It was like that. It was that example. And so the anticipated grief then and even now is phenomenal, because people know. Do they know? No, they don't know they were going to pass. They thought they were going to, but there's an element of them that knows that it's changing. It's going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just makes me. I wonder what impact that had on those people being able to pass. What energy perhaps they took with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what they were experiencing. Because you've really got me thinking now, Jock, about my dad in his anticipatory grief. Acknowledging mine, yeah. Honouring mine, but also honouring his. And before even honouring it, acknowledging that it exists. Because you've got me thinking now, imagining those people who were in hospital on ventilators, knowing and not knowing, but, you know, intuitively knowing that this was going to be the end, and what kinds of energy.
And I do feel that they all knew at some level in their soul, they knew this was it. And it begs the question, was it meant to be or was it not? And that's, I mean, again, that's for another episode. But the level anticipated grief, it was phenomenal and still is. I mean, people are still suffering from that now.
And that's the, you know, accidents happen at, I'm working with a client who was in a fatal crash and another passenger died as a result of that. And
like, do you think you can help people now that we've had this conversation, and now that you've kind of had an enlightening moment, do you think now that you could effectively help people who are coming to see you that have got anticipated grief that you can bring into your practice?
I think just being able to name it, Jock, like I started this, you know, episode by thanking you really for giving me that name, that label, and how powerful that's been for me. So I think to be able to offer that to other people will definitely help, for sure.
Now, let's talk a little bit about before we finish off, your practice. What do you tend to deal with in your practice, in your psychotherapy practice?
Everything and anything. So I have a founder, a humanistic foundation, person-centered counselling, Carl Rogers, was my grounding. Over the last 3 years, I've stepped into a transpersonal model, which just basically incorporates more of who we are. That's the basic way that I would explain it. We're not just working with the psychology and the mind, we're working with the body, we're working with the soul, we're working with and using different
ways. So bringing somatic therapies in as well.
Absolutely. Right. So I work with little primary school children. So for those in America, that's like 7 to 11. I work with young women in a local women's charity. I have a private practice where, you know, anybody can be referred. Obviously, if they're not appropriate because they're in crisis or it's just not, you know, I don't feel like we're aligned as client and therapist, then I can always refer on. And I also do a big chunk of work with people who are long-term unemployed, trying to help them just acknowledge other parts of themselves that may be unknowingly holding them back to stepping into
unemployment grief.
Never even thought about that, Joe.
Right, so effectively when they're unemployed, they're immediately disconnected from their environment, they're disconnected from their sense of worthiness from themselves as well.
Yeah.
Again, this is another element, this field that we're bringing in, because they're grieving.
They are. Wow.
And you can take elements of this grief into that practice to help them. And it's empowering when people understand that this is grief and this is not something we heal from. It's a journey that we integrate when we learn to integrate it. I've got a saying. I say grief can be your greatest nemesis or your greatest spiritual teacher. It's up to you. You have the choice to to go from that awareness to the action.
Yeah.
That's important.
Choice, responsibility, individual responsibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Rebecca, it's been amazing having you on. I want to have you back because we can have so many. We're going to also have you on Optimizing Human Potential, but this has been great. And I think it's a lot of people will get a lot from this. As we finish off this final few minutes, I want to give people some tools that we can give them to help them if they're in anticipated grief now, how they become aware of it and what tools that we can give them. What would be your tools that you would suggest to someone?
If you're in anticipatory grief, acknowledge that not all grief looks like somebody dying.
Yes,
once you've acknowledged it, self-compassion. I also really love the Whirlpool of Grief visual graphic. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Jock.
Absolutely
helps.
Yeah.
Just people to visualize, and I use it often when we're exploring grief with clients, but just for people to think about and accept within them all the different stages and feelings and emotions that they're going to go through. They're going to go through the shock, the denial. They're going to go from acceptance, and they can go straight back in the whirlpool, back around to shock. So for me, acknowledge it, self-compassion, community. Allow people to be there and support you. Talk to someone. If it's a therapist, if it's not, somebody else that you trust that can hold you.
Absolutely. I think that sense of community is very important. And anybody who's listening here, we have the Pillars of Grief community, which is free. You can come and join it. And it's a very small private community, but everybody's there in a supporting nature. Other thing I would also say, ladies and gentlemen, is you know, get a journal out. Start to journal. Start to write your feelings down. There's something very cathartic and powerful in writing your feelings down, because if you're not a person that can vocalize, that can show your emotions, you can balance those emotions out by, you know, writing something in a journal.
I will add to that, Joch.
Yeah.
If you can't write, draw. If you can't write, and whatever works for you, but journal, and yes.
My next tip would be get a camera out. Whether it's your iPhone,
Yeah.
Or whether you buy yourself a camera, because the camera is very powerful. It creates memories. There's images in time. There's that moment in time. And you can help with your grief by creating images and how you feel, creating images and maybe the beauty that you see, or something about interconnectedness. There's so many tools that we can give you to help, and that's something maybe we'll develop a checklist, or develop maybe a little class in our group about all these tools that you can utilize. And even music, there's so many different things that you can utilize as well to help you through it. Just realize, though, that anticipatory grief is real. And it can be very empowering, as you've witnessed today, or it can be destructive. It's how you approach it. It's how you become aware of it. I know what I'd rather make the decision to do, to become empowered of it. Grief is not something to fear. Grief is something to actually embrace and to bring into your being as part of that journey that can become your greatest teacher. Rebecca, it's been amazing having you. Thank you for coming on the Pillars of Grief. I'm definitely going to have you back, because this has been a really fun conversation. Even though it's a serious conversation, but it's important that also we can share in what we do and share our fun times or sad times, everything together. And that's that sense of community. If anybody wants to connect with you at your practice to get advice or something, give me your details.
So I'm on email. It's rmcounsellinguk@gmail.com. I'm on LinkedIn, Rebecca Morton. And I don't do social media, so that's where you'll get me.
I'm also on the Holistic Network.
Yes, I am. You just took the words out of my mouth, Jock. Look at that intuition again. Yeah, I'm on the Holistic Network, yeah, which is a really easy place to grab me now as well. Jock's twisted, absolutely, got me in there, because I'm not very good at social media and promoting myself, so Jock's finally got me in there.
I've got her in there so she can reach other people. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening today. If you've got any questions for Rebecca or for me, you'd know what to do. Just email us. You can connect with me on Instagram. You can message me on YouTube. I may not always answer straight away, but I will always answer, that's for sure. And take some time for yourself. As Rebecca said in this, it's important to have some self-care and self-love. Self-care doesn't also necessarily mean pandering yourself with gifts and things. It sometimes just means reading. It sometimes just taking some time for yourself. But also, one of the important things I'll say from here is, do not be afraid to express your grief, because that is going to help that flow run like nature, mother intended. God bless, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming back. This is Jock. This is the Pillars of Grief. I shall speak to you soon. God bless. Thank you for tuning in to the Pillars of Grief with me. If you've found this podcast helpful, please consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Also, leaving a review can help others find the show and receive the guidance they need on their journey through grief. I appreciate your feedback and look forward to hearing from you all. Join my free online support community for those grieving and connect with others who understand what you're going through. I offer you a spiritual blessing and hope you will join me on the next episode. Till then, open your mind and allow the power of the divine to transform your grief to spiritual realization. God bless.